This is a WATD Political Forum on 95.9 WATD, online at 95.9WATD.com. Now, live from Studio B, here's your moderator, WATD's Christine James.
Good evening and thank you. I am your moderator, Christine James, and it's a WATD Political Forum. We always look forward to these. Tonight, it's the race for the 1st Plymouth District. We have the Republican incumbent, Matt Muratori, here, and his Democratic challenger, Stephen Michael Palmer. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, because I know this is one of the few districts that's just one town, and it's Plymouth now. Precincts 2 through 8, 10, 12, 14, and 15. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay, that was your quick pop quiz. Tonight, asking questions with me, we've got Monday Night Talk host Kevin Tachi and our own Charles Mathewson asking questions. Now, our format is simple. We always use the same one. We ask the candidates to have opening statements prepared, no longer than 2 minutes, and a closing statement of no longer than 1 minute. Reporters will ask a round of questions, and we'll ask some lightning round questions. You know what that means. The answers are either yes or no, or one or two sentences tops, and we'll tell you what we want. Now, to keep the timing straight, we have Amy Leonard right there. See, we're all socially distanced here between three separate studios. Green means go, red means stop, yellow means you have 10 seconds. Now, if you're on red, I usually give you a 5-second grace period. If you keep talking, it's the bell. If you keep talking after that, Ben will cut your mic. So we've been using the bell a lot lately. I know it seems like politicians really want to say a lot, and then after we use it a few times, I see the look of fear at the bell, and people seem to wrap it up a little bit, but we try to keep everything pulled together. Now, we just chose the opening and closing order of the candidates out of the official WATD Newsroom koozie stand-in. That's right, the original is still missing, we believe. Misplaced or stolen, perhaps, at the end of the last political season. Return it, no questions asked. So, we'll begin with Matt Muratori, and then we will go to Stephen Michael Palmer. Let's say good evening to Matt Muratori.
Good evening, and thank you to you folks at WATD for hosting this forum. I've had the privilege of representing the 1st Plymouth District and Massachusetts House of Representatives since 2014. I'm a proud husband and father of 6 daughters. My wife, Kristen, is a local elder law attorney.
By the way,
we live in South Plymouth, and 3 of our daughters attend Plymouth Public Schools. Up on Beacon Hill, I've had a successful track record of advocating for our community on many issues, including economic growth, health care, housing, local aid, and tourism initiatives. I'm a relationship builder who works in collaboration with colleagues on both political parties, and with the Baker Polito administration in getting things done for the people of Plymouth and the residents of the Commonwealth. Among our legislative highlighted accomplishments this session includes over $1 million in funding for the Plymouth Tourism, Arts, and Culture, $3 million for the Warren Coves Seawall, $3 million for roads and bridges, over $170,000 for a complete street grant for Main Street, $100,000 for the Massachusetts Chronicles, and over $315,000 in the workforce skills grants for Plymouth South High School's auto tech program. As a small business owner with a longtime background in healthcare for seniors and early childhood education, I understand firsthand the concerns of small businesses, senior citizens, families, and taxpayers. I bring this broad base of experience to the State House, where we have worked to support numerous bills to assist residents, businesses, schools, and municipalities impacted by COVID-19, including options to conduct a virtual town meeting where we just had, approved regulations to assist restaurants, extended unemployment benefits, and waived the MCAS requirements, to name a few. I have a perfect voting record with over 1,300 votes and counting since being elected in 2014. I ask for your vote on Election Day, Tuesday, on November 3rd, or prior to, whenever you decide to vote. And thanks again for WAT to hosting this.
Thank you very much. That was the opening statement of Matt Muratori. Now let's go to the opening statement of Stephen Michael Palmer.
Thank you. I'm a moderate Democrat, no liberal here, no tax and spend. Been elected town meeting member, presently serving on the board of Plymouth Redevelopment Authority as a chairman, appointed trustee of the Plymouth Affordable Housing Trust, along with Plymouth Incorporated Housing. I've been a town meeting member in Plymouth as well as Braintree. The Democratic Party in Plymouth has asked me to run for the seat and said I would. No one should run unopposed. We always must strive to do better. Massachusetts House of Representatives in 2017, first order of business was a pay raise for themselves with our money. Speaker DeLeo boosted his salary 50% to $169,000. That is 10 times what the average citizen makes. Massachusetts state payroll has grown $7.4 billion. 18,000 make over $100,000. Over 900 people make $200,000. Medium income from any state worker is $57,000. Whatever happened to integrity? Business as usual. But we need someone who can stand up, speak up against the status quo as well as the establishment. As a town meeting member in Plymouth, I voted for the cost of living for police and fire, full-time preschool daycare, pilot money for Herring Pond Watershed Association. The funds would be dedicated to the environment projects as well as land and water. Voted for CPA funds to go to restore historical buildings. For I'm concerned about fiscal responsibility. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That was the opening statement, Stephen Michael Palmer. Now we're going to go to questions. We're going to begin with questioning with Tevin Chachi.
I don't feel it's fair to start our conversation without at least addressing the pandemic. This has wreaked havoc on many of the candidates who have sat before us, participated. How has this pandemic made your delivery of your message for your campaigns been difficult? And what have you been doing to try to reach the masses for this particular election? We'll start with you, Stephen.
Well, it all started when they wanted the signatures. And the fact is that, you know, no one wanted to go out there. And, you know, I tried in supermarkets and they kicked me out. You know, I tried in front of banks and they kicked me out. So to get 75 signatures, it took me a half hour to get one signature. Sometimes it would take me an hour to get one signature. Democratic Party helped me with 10 signatures, but I went out for weeks, day upon day upon day, okay? If you're political, go away, don't come back, okay? And you know, there's a climate out there that, Mr. Tachi, you understand that. And the fact is that, you know, you have to fight it. You have to keep going. You know, my father was a probation officer for 27 years at the West Roxbury Courthouse. And he said the fact is that, you know, you can always find something good of someone, you know. Go to the next person. 9 out of 10 people are good.
Thank you. That was Stephen Michael Palmer. Same question, Matt Moratori.
Yeah, well, when you talk about trying to get signatures, I was actually at 2 o'clock on that Friday, I brought my signatures in. I had well over the amount needed was well over 300 that I had. And I was there at 2:05. At 2 o'clock, it changed that you only needed, I don't know, was it 50 or something like that?
75.
But, whatever. But, yeah, what I did was I actually mailed them to people. I would contact people, mail them, have them mail them back, or I could pick them up in their mailbox. But, you know, the giving the message out is what you're saying. It is a tough thing to do. I'm like Stephen. I like to go out in the community and meet people and talk to people, and you really can't do that now. So I've been a big person on social media for a decade now anyways, on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram, and we just keep pushing the messages out and everything we can to get the word out to people.
But have you found it difficult to be on social media and be able to get the word out knowing that there's such, depending on who you are as a candidate, that you get a lot of backlash?
I don't get a lot of backlash now because I try to do a lot of positive things and positive messages and all that, and retweet a lot of stuff or resend out, you know, Facebook posts, et cetera, from other people. But it's been difficult for everything. So you try to be creative as best you can.
Stephen, same question. Have you been trying to use social media to get your message out? And if so, how have you been greeted?
Well, I have a public relations manager who does that in the city of Boston. His name is Todd, and the fact is that he handles all that. And, you know, I think social media is the virus myself. You know, I just feel that it doesn't, it's kind of like people spend four to three hours on the cell phone, you know. And I'd rather go out there and, you know, keep walking. And, you know, 2-3 hours is a lot of time to be wasted looking at a cell phone. And it's kind of like this. I work in a hotel, and the fact is that the key card will demagnetize if it's next to a cell phone. Can you imagine what it's doing to your hand, and imagine what it's doing to your head?
Okay. Charles Matthews, and the questions for the candidates.
Matt, we enjoy watching you on what we generally call the Triff Show, Stephen Trifletti's weekly COVID update. Do you think the state has gone too fast or too slow in reopening the economy?
Well, I'm always a big proponent with regard to looking at the data and the science and not the dates. And I think we've done a great job. I think the governor's done a great job with that. I think probably, though, I think it's been since August 1st, we've been 1% or below 1% of the confirmed cases. I think I'd like to see us maybe speed up a little bit and start opening a little bit more, and I think we will start doing that, particularly when it comes to restaurants. It's getting cold out there now, and there'll be a lot of restaurants that will go under in this state if we don't try to help them out in an economic way or help them by opening up some more. So I'd like to see that happen more.
Stephen, same question. Have we gone too fast or too slow in reopening the economy?
Well, I agree with Charlie Baker. I think Charlie Baker's done a good job, and he's right on there. And I remember when we only had like 900 cases, and in fact now is we've got 9,000 deaths. And the fact is that it's still out there, and the fact is that it's hurting people economically. I've lost one job myself because of it in March, so I feel the pinch myself. Seeing I'm only one family. Payroll person. The fact is that something has to be done. The federal government has to come in. But back to the question. I think Charlie Baker's done a good job, and I think we have to hold back. The numbers say it all. Thank you, Charlie.
Any follow-up, Charlie?
No, that's it. Thank you.
Okay. I want to talk about one of the most contentious issues that's been going on for a while, and that's about police, whatever you want to call it, reform, defunding, changes to the way police operate here in the state and nationwide. That's been an ongoing conversation, protest, people very passionate on many different sides of the issue. First of all, I want to ask you, the way that this has been handled legislatively here in Massachusetts, number one, do you agree with the way this has been handled? And then we'll ask you a second part about what your thoughts are. Matt Moratori, what do you think about the way this whole issue of police reform and defunding has been handled on Beacon Hill?
I think there, first of all, that there needs to be some sort of reforms happening. And it all triggered what happened out in Minnesota. And I think the Black and Latino caucus have been talking with the Baker administration for probably almost a year on this particular topic. So we knew it was happening anyways. But I think what happened was then we tried to push it towards the end of what we thought was going to be end of session. And then it got expanded to too many things. And I was, one of 66 that just I couldn't vote on it because it went too far beyond what really I thought police reform should be.
Now, let me ask you, what do you think police reform should be?
Well, I think there, in this area, I think we do it right. I think there's a lot of community policing that does go on here. I know in Plymouth, we've been doing that for years. I know on the South Shore, it happens everywhere. So I think maybe some more education may happen. Not many more things I don't think really needs to happen here. Just because what happened in Minnesota or somewhere else doesn't mean we're the same here. So I always look at what do we need here in our community in Plymouth.
Okay. Stephen Michael Palmer, same two questions. Let's start with, first of all, the way this issue was taken up on Beacon Hill. Do you agree with the way that this was done?
I'm not really a person that... badmouth the police. The fact is that I think most police officers do a good job, and I agree with Matt. This is in Minnesota, and the fact is, there's a lot of people. I remember years ago, and my friend was a police officer in Braintree, and he said, we should have like a citizen board. I'm for a citizen board for someone to, get appointed or even elected to the board and, have a watchdog group, especially with the stateies, the overtime, and the Boston police with the overtime and, punching out early and still getting paid. And, that goes on, and, it shouldn't go on because it's taxpayers' money. It's our money, and we don't want to see it wasted. And, I was talking to a guy campaigning today, and he was a Plymouth police officer. And he said, for the people that, had done the crime and people that took the money and people that, chipped themselves, fact is they should be prosecuted.
We kind of switched that a little bit because you talked about, that's okay, you talked a little bit about the second part of the question, but the first part was the way that this was handled on Beacon Hill. We heard a lot of people complaining, say, kind of done in the dead of the night. They didn't get or talked to a couple retired chiefs, and they said, how would you feel if they were talking about your job and they really didn't care what you had to say? They were going to change your work conditions. They were going to decide how you're going to be paid. They were going to change the way you live. So there's been a lot of criticism on the way it was handled on Beacon Hill. Do you agree with that or no?
I really haven't looked at it specifically, so I really can't answer that question. But I'm not up for 100% police reform. I think the police are doing a good job in Massachusetts. And again, what Matt said, this is in Minnesota.
Okay, thank you. Go back to you, Kevin Tachi. Questions for the candidates.
It's interesting. This is when I was writing my questions this week, and I didn't realize that this question would be one of the news stories, and that is in regards to Pilgrim Nuclear Power Station in Plymouth. It went offline in 2019. There's been a lot of questions in regards to the decommissioning process. I want to ask you both. What are your concerns about this process? What role will you or have you played in being vocal when it comes to the safe cleanup of the particular site? Start with you, Matt.
Yeah, sure. Good question. Well, as you're probably aware, I have been involved for a number of years with the power plant, first starting out in the mid-2000s with being on the Finance Committee, then being on the Select Board back in 2010, and now as a state rep. And it's always been, the safety has always been a concern, but it's something that's always been monitored. And recently we had, between the former Senator Vinnie DiMaceto and myself, we were able to get the decommissioning panel put together. Had the governor approve that, put that together to oversee the decommissioning process. Recently the Attorney General actually settled it was going to be a lawsuit, but settled it out of court with the power plant on some things that will help the Commonwealth to oversee the safety, ensure that it's going to be safe. But there are still some economic concerns, too, for the community of Plymouth that, the lack of compensation that they're going to be storing these as a nuclear waste dump for a number of years.
Mr. Palmer, same question.
Yes, when I was a town meeting member in Plymouth, that was in my precinct, and it took an act of Congress to get in there, and I did. And I toured it, and I felt it was safe. I know John Mahoney's going to be the chairman of the decommission, and I have faith in him. But what I'm really disappointed in is the to switch gears here, the emergency NRC, emergency plan for a 10-mile radius of the plan itself was funded by the Massachusetts budget at $2 million. And last year it was eliminated. I will fight for this money to come back, and the fact is that, it was all voted and everything was okay, but the $2 million was taken out, and we don't have an emergency plan for a 10-mile radius. And you can thank the state legislators for that, as well as the NRC.
Any follow-up questions with that, Kevin?
I'm just curious about the $2 million. What was the purpose, and is this something that could have been fought for by legislators, or are you saying this is something that the leadership...
They took it out, okay. I mean, who knows where the money went to, I mean, I've got to get in there myself and dig, okay? I've got to get in there and look myself. I'm going to be two new ears, two new eyes, and one good mouth.
Measure twice, cut once. Matt, you want to respond to his comment in regards to the $2 million?
I'm not sure about the $2 million he's talking about, but I do know that there was a deal that was struck, especially with the town of Plymouth, that there will be money for the emergency planning going on for the next couple of years at least. I know some other communities are not getting it, which I was not really happy about, and we were hoping the Attorney General with her negotiations would be able to help get that for a little bit further down the road, but that just didn't happen. So, we're going to work with the Decommissioning Commission and see what they're going to recommend. We'll try to push and help there.
Okay. Charles Mathewson, questions for the candidates?
I'd like to return to the police reform question with some more specifics. The bill, in general, would provide more training, would certify police the same as licensing, and would do away with some of the legal protections if they're sued. I'd like to know how you feel about each of those three areas, particularly the certification or licensing. we license plumbers, hairdressers. Should we not license police?
Let's start with Stephen Michael Palmer this time.
Of course we should certify them. I mean, I know I'm familiar with New Braintree. I'm familiar with High Park Police Academy. And you know, my daughter dating a gentleman who's going to the police academy for court officers. So I feel that a license is a good thing, and it would benefit the public if they were certified in the right way. So maybe we can pick and choose better police officers. Thank you, Charlie.
Okay, Matt.
Yeah, thanks, Charlie, for the question. As I said, education, I think, was a good thing, and the training was a good thing to do. The certification, I like that part of it as well that was in there. I think we were one of maybe 7 or 8 states, I don't remember exactly, that do not certify police officers in this country. So I thought that, you know, that was a good idea, too, and I think the police unions all agree with that as well. It was the lawsuit part that was really the stickler of this whole thing. And so that was the part that I think it got a lot of people, and why, for the first time in years, the vote on Beacon Hill was so split the way it was.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Let's continue talking a little bit about civil unrest and things that have been happening. In your town, in Plymouth, paint thrown on Plymouth Rock, something else thrown, I think it might have been suntan lotion, and I think there were young activists that said something like, it's my civic duty. Now, I'm going to play devil's advocate here. When somebody says it's my civic duty, and please don't, not in a million angry emails, I've talked to a lot of young people that don't have that much of a concept of history in the past 40 or 50 years here in the United States. They're passionate, they've got great instincts, they want to do the right thing, but sometimes I wonder if they understand it in context. So when you hear someone putting suntan lotion on Plymouth Rock and saying it's my civic duty, do you agree with that, Matt?
No, not at all. I think we've gotten to the point where we're a society that has it's instant gratification on things. I think things like that happen, they're jokesters, they're pranksters, they want to put it out on social media and, you know, get the attention that they want. But that's just not the way to do it. I mean, we've got to get back to the point where, you know, we're respectful of others, we're respectful of the history, we're respectful of the property that we have, and I think we've just gone off the rails with that over the last several years.
Okay. What about you? What do you think about that, Stephen Michael Palmer? Do you think maybe well-intentioned but misguided, some of the protesters, do they really understand what they're doing, throwing things like suntan lotion on Plymouth Rock?
The biggest word you have there was misguided. I was a school teacher for 10 years myself in South Boston of St. Augustine's. Coached the baseball, football, and basketball. And I taught first grade and second grade and seventh and eighth. And the fact is that, you know, you have to go back to the parents. You know, I mean, I tell my son that, you know, if he lived in my house, my son's an only child, was his daughter, only male, and I grew up with, you know, 6 other boys, but the fact is that he would never make it in my father's house, okay? So the thing about it is I let him get away with stuff. Seeing he lost his mother, I take care of him a little better, but, you know, you have to go back to the parents. Misguided? Of course they're misguided, you know? To have anyone do that, my son would hopefully would never do that, you know, because he knows right from wrong. And the fact is, you could tell when I was, you know, teaching them the projects in South Boston, I could tell the ones that had parents, and I could tell the ones that were grown up brought up by their grandparents, okay, and one-parent families. So, you know,
let me ask you both
it's misguided.
Let me ask you both a follow-up question. What kind of social protest do you support, Stephen Michael Palmer?
I protest all the time. I've protested Comcast. I've protested my construction sites in my neighborhood that haven't been gone on for months and months and months, and I stand out there with a sign. And, you know, I don't have a bullhorn, you know, but, you know, protest. That's what it says, protest. Okay. There's nothing wrong with protesting. It's a civil liberty, and everyone should be able to do it, but they shouldn't be looting.
Matt Murtry, what kind of civil protesting do you support?
Yeah, I can't agree more. It's you know, we live in the United States where we have the right to protest, and I think we should protest where we need to in a very organized and civil way and speak out when you need to speak out. And I think we shouldn't say that protesters are bad. there are certain elements of people in everything we do in society that is bad, but we shouldn't paint a broad brush over that. Mm-hmm. Protests are good. All the protesters are good. It's a small amount of people that seem to ruin it for everyone, and we have to make sure we don't focus on the small group that destroys it.
You ever held a picket sign or protested anything, Matt?
I can't recall. No. Okay. I like to stay behind the scenes a lot, believe it or not, even though I'm doing this now.
If you're wondering what you're listening to, this is a political forum of the two candidates for the 1st Plymouth District, the state rep seat. We have the incumbent here, Republican Matt Moratori, and the Democrat challenger, Stephen Michael Palmer. I'm Christine James, and asking questions with me, Kevin Tachi, the host of Monday Night Talk, and Charles Mathewson, too, one of our reporters. Now let's go to Kevin Tachi again. Questions for the candidates.
The state's economy and the employment numbers seem to be rebounding from the pandemic, depending on whether we're going to see a second COVID-19 wave. And everybody's not saying if, they're saying when. What measures should the state take to bolster the economy or help stimulate job growth? And should the state wait until we actually see this second wave? Mr. Palmer?
Yeah, we're down $5 billion in the revenue, so the fact is, you know, I feel we should start cutting salaries, you know, from the top down. You know, maybe 10% of them makes $100,000, 15% of them make $200,000, and the fact is that, you know, let's do it now. I mean, they're already overpaid, I feel, you know, and if I get up there, I'm going to tell them that. You know, you can have my money, here it is, you know, and everybody, you know, cash in and, you know, make a donation. And the fact is, we're down $5 million. You know, should the kids in high schools and colleges suffer? You know, we've got they're all overpaid. I feel, you know, the $8 million pay raise they just voted themselves. Boston Symphony Orchestra, 37% deduction in payroll because people giving it up. You know.
Are cuts the only way, though? Cuts to salaries the only way to be able to stimulate the economy? Or is there any other initiatives you'd like to see offered?
You know, just the fact is I feel that we've got to start somewhere with trillions and trillions of dollars in deficit. And the fact is that Bill Clinton balanced the budget when he was president and he was a Democrat.
Okay. Matt, same question. What should be done to help the state stimulate a bolster the economy?
Yeah, I think it's trying to do something now to stimulate the economy is because of people are fearful of the second wave. There's still people that still don't go out right now. They're still not going to go out to restaurants or places right now. I think once you get the vaccine in place, I think that will make people feel more comfortable. But that's not going to be for, you know, probably the first quarter of next year, second quarter of next year, when things are really going to start opening up. So I think in one way for the state government, we're waiting for the federal government to see what they're going to come up with funding to help that $5 or $6 billion gap. But one way we really do need to start looking, I think, is looking at the state government and looking at, you know, maybe some buyouts for people who are on the cusp of retiring. Can we buy people out to reduce the payroll in the state? We're going to have to use a rainy day fund. And then after, I think, all this is over, which won't be probably till the next budget in 2022, that's when we start looking at how do we can help the economy rebound.
Okay, thank you. Charles Mathewson, questions for the candidates.
You each have experience in municipal government. And they're hurting right now, just as the state is. There was a level funding of local aid that caused a sigh of relief in many town halls and city halls. Being specific to Plymouth, what do you think the state can do to assist municipal government in Plymouth, Matt?
Well, like you said, the level funding is one way. We've done a few other things as well. As you know, I know it was controversial, but the whole the Plymouth County and the $90 million they got through the Federal Government CARES Act, you know, that's another way. But the state can't do. There's other things we can do legislatively to help. To help the municipalities as well. But there's not a lot more we can do with funding because we can't make the money. Only the federal government can actually do that. So we'll have to continue to talk to the community to see what they need, but the level funding was the key, and giving them money for the education is the key. So I think if we continue to give the money that was voted on last year for education, I think that will go a long way as well.
Stephen Michael Palmer, would you continue that funding?
I was at a Charitable Housing Trust Corporation meeting, first one we've had since March, and I pushed for that meeting. I don't know what they were doing, but it took them 7 months to put it together. And it was a pretty good meeting. We've probably got over $2 million in affordable housing trust money to be spread out, and the CARES Act gave us $600,000, which everybody cheered for. You know, the fact is that we do buyouts and we do buy downs, and the fact is that, you know, we try to help affordable housing as well as we can. But back to your question, Charlie. You know, it's got to come from somewhere. You know, it's got to come from the federal government or the state, but I'm really concerned about the budget itself and the way the deficit is, and the $5 million is not coming. It's not coming from Uncle Sam.
Any follow-up question, Charlie?
No, that's good. Thank you.
While we're on the CARES Act, let's talk a little bit about, there was some controversy about this because the county officials applied for the grant. I think it was $90 million. The state asked them through the governor, let them administer it. There was a little bit of a back and forth, and they finally went through Plymouth County. Do you think that that's going to come back and bite us in the proverbial rear end in the end, Mr. Moratorium?
No, I don't at all. I was actually one of the people that was asked to get involved with that between the state and the county government and kind of trying to work that through. And the more I would talk to the county, the more comfortable I felt with how they were doing it, because they've done this before years ago. I forget when it was, but it was a couple decades ago. But they're using outside companies and the outside sources that are doing this. They understand, just like the state does, they understand what the regulations are, what's reimbursable, what's not reimbursable, etc. So I think because the eyes are so much on them with this, I don't think it's going to bite us at all. And I do applaud them for actually doing that, because I think it gets the money quicker to the communities that really need it.
Okay.
Whereas a state is something bigger that it's harder to do.
Do you think if it had gone through the state, do you think the towns in Plymouth County would be getting the money that they're getting now, the amounts, and as quickly as they're getting?
I don't think they get them as quickly as they're getting them now. And the amounts, I'm not sure they would. And I'll tell you the reason why, if I may. I think because there's a connection between the municipalities and the county government. So there's good communications, good relationships. Whereas with the state and the towns, it's a big enterprise, and it's hard to find somebody to answer a question or something. But I know there's a lot of communities that have asked questions of the county, well, would this count? Would that count? Which I don't think that would actually really happen all that much if they were dealing with the state.
Okay. Same question for you, Stephen Michael Palmer. You saw what the county did going ahead, applying for and getting the $90 million in CARES Act funding to hand out to the towns and communities here in Plymouth County. Do you agree with the way it was done? Do you think that will come back in the end to be a problem because they stood up against the state and the governor and they were not happy about that in the beginning?
Yeah, I was against them holding that dough. You know, I don't know who they think they are, and I hope the state government hopefully takes them to court and you know, slaps them on the hand a little. But that money is theirs, and they're going to do what they want with it, and they have control of it. And the fact is that where's it going to go? And, you know, being a state rep, I would go in there and open up the books like I've opened up the books when I was a town meeting member, and people weren't happy when I asked about, you know, cost overrides and salaries, et cetera. So, you know, until then, I'm just in the public. But I was against that when I read that in the newspaper. So who do those people think they are?
Do you think, as I asked Matt Moratori, do you think that the fact that it went through the county, that the money, the amounts of the funds and the money going to the towns was more streamlined, or was faster than it would have been through the state? Or do you think it would have been any difference at all?
Kind of to put a clarification on it, it's kind of like the funding for education. You know, the rich towns get more money than the poor towns. So, you know, the county's going to do what they want with it, you know, to predict what they're going to do with the money. You know, it's a crystal ball, but the fact is that I hope Plymouth gets a share, and if I do become elected, and when I get elected, we will get our share.
Okay, thank you. Kevin Johnson, questions for the candidates?
Part of me wants to kind of delve into the county conversation because there's so much more there in regards to why the county went for that money. The prime reason was because they felt that all the monies that they were getting was going to go to all 27 communities where the state could not guarantee that that $90 million was going to go there, not to give any kind of a cheap history lesson.
They buffaloed them. They buffaloed them.
But here's my question. My question, well, I'm going to kind of stay on the county. I wasn't going to, but I'm going to. Knowing that the county hasn't necessarily gotten they've kind of gotten a raw deal, so to speak, when it comes to the revenues that they generate. State takes the money and says, you know, here's 10 cents on the dollar.
Yeah.
How fair is that, Stephen?
It's wrong. You know, it's just the fact is it's kind of like the education funding up at the State House, the way they, you know, disperse money goes to the rich towns and the poor towns don't get it. You know, they have to change that whole specimen of the what's going on, you know. It's just the fact that it doesn't help everyone, as you said. Who's going to get it?
So doesn't a part of you say, good for the county for stepping in and showing that they are viable, you know, that as a government entity? Do you not feel that way at all?
No, I think they stole the money.
Okay. Same question to you. You feel that maybe knowing that the county hasn't necessarily gotten a fair shake over the years, at least that the years that I know of and that I've been a reporter covering, haven't necessarily gotten a fair shake? Would you give me your thoughts?
I think so, and I've helped advocate to get that 10 cents up higher. Unsuccessful, but we'll continue to keep working. I think because, you know, each town cannot live on its own anymore. I mean, I know the town of Plymouth is going to look for an override in a couple, 2 or 3 years. You just can't keep spending and spending and spending. So there's got to be some consolidation that has to happen somewhere down the road. And if you look at other parts of the country, county government does that. One way I think this county could do it, if they had the funding to do it, is take Board of Health. And look at the pandemic with you. If you were able to get all the Board of Health, all the health under one, and think of the savings you have in the town, but you have a viable health for the county, that's just one way. There's so many other ways to actually look at to regionalize, to save the municipalities the money, and to save the state monies overall.
Okay. Charles Mathewson, question for the candidates.
We have concentrated so on the COVID pandemic. We've had a little less emphasis on the previous epidemic of opioids. I've been going into Boston on a nearly daily basis for the last 6 weeks, and I drive by so-called Mass Cass, Massachusetts Avenue and Melnea Cass Boulevard, and it has not gone away. Stephen Michael Palmer, have you changed your view on the opioid epidemic?
I haven't changed my view. The fact is, Charlie, that's methadone mile, they call it over there at Mass Ave. Methadone mile. Fact is, I worked at Boston City Hospital for years as a volunteer in the pediatric wards. Very familiar with what you're talking about, Charlie. When are we going to open Long Island? When are we going to take a boat and take the homeless and the drug addictions to a home instead of letting them being on the street? Well, what's going to happen in Long Island, Charlie? You think they're going to put the nice condos in there for what, $3 million a unit? Come on, let's go. Let's get it done. You know, they take the bridge down and Marty Walsh is, you know, hanging out and everything's going fine, but yet the people still sleep on the streets.
Marty Walsh says it's up to the mayor of Quincy to build the bridge.
Let's build the bridge and let's get it done. I mean, they're not gonna let the homeless in there anymore. The fact is, they're gonna build condos there sooner or later. Marty Walsh and the mayor and this and that, and Charlie, it goes on and on and on, and nothing gets done, and the people are still sleeping in the streets. They call it the methadone mile.
Matthew Moratori, what do you think about the opioid epidemic?
Well, if you looked at the numbers, and I still track these numbers, it's gotten worse during this whole thing, and it stands to reason that it would, you know, where there's a lot of things that are shut down. However, in Plymouth, though, we have a number of organizations, the Plymouth Youth Development Collaborative, which I'm a member of, have been for a number of years now, that continues to work on us, continues to meet monthly. We recently got, in the last year, $1 million grant through, it's called the HEAL grant. There's a group that's working on that specifically for Plymouth actually got this. I think Sandwich got it as well, or Bourne or somebody. But we got $1 million here, so we continue to work on it in Plymouth as well for that grant. And the EB Hope that started with the county, that's involved into another one. They've got grant money as well, and they're still meeting on a regular basis as well. So even through us, we have groups that are still working on this for us in Plymouth.
I think E.B. Hope actually started with Mike Butteri and John Rogers.
That's correct.
And the Plymouth Police Department.
That's correct.
And they get no credit for it.
That's correct. Yep, exactly right. And now John Rogers is actually running that program now with several dozen other groups that are involved with it on a regular basis.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. All right, let me ask, just switch gears here for a minute. 2020. This is not exactly the way it was supposed to be when you talk about the pandemic, and especially working towards the big celebration, the Plymouth 400. Some things were sort of pushed into 2021, and I know that there are so many moving pieces. Other people have to come from other parts of the country, other countries, period. How do you think, when all is said and done, by the end of this year and going into 2021, the Plymouth 400, how do you think this is all going to play out, Matt Moratori?
With regard to the tourism,
Any money here?
Yeah, no. Yeah, tourism is and Stephen can probably talk better than I can on this because he's in the hospitality industry. That, you know, the hospitality tourism industry has been devastated, and will be for some time. It's not going to come back. Say the vaccine does come out the first quarter next year, people are still not going to be comfortable traveling and all that. So we're not going to see it probably start recovering. When you talk to people like Lee Folsom and people at MOD at the state, you're talking 2, 3, 4 years down the road before it really will come back to where it was. So, however, we do have an advantage in Plymouth because of our historical nature of us, the beaches, the restaurants, and all that where we can look to get people that are local coming. So people that live within an hour drive of the Cape or Providence or Boston or something like that. So we're really concentrating on that population to come up. But the international population, which is really the gravy for tourism in Plymouth, is not going to happen for a couple of years.
What do you think? Do you think the same thing, Stephen? Michael Palmer, you have a different perspective on the Plymouth 400.
Right. I've been working in hotels for 40 years of my life. So, you know, I see it. I've lost one of my jobs that I had in March. I'm down to one job. I'm paying my taxes and paying my bills, etc. But tourists, I don't see it coming back. One of the hotels that I work at now is, you know, down up to about 30%. And the fact is that, you know, you drive down the boulevard or the waterfront in Plymouth, and you know, you don't see anyone. You know, I get there early in the morning at 7 o'clock to go to Mass at St. Peter's. And the fact is that, you know, years ago you couldn't get a parking spot. You know, people would be lined up. And it's a sad state of affairs. And when is it going to come back? When we get a pandemic pill that says it's going to go away. You know, it just doesn't seem to get any better.
Okay. Kevin Tachi, questions for the candidates?
Just kind of following Christine's lead and talking about the Plymouth 400th events, knowing that 100 years ago, facing the Spanish flu, that the 300th had to be put off, does this offer an opportunity maybe to generate more revenue for when the town is able to actually celebrate its birthday, whether it's a year or two down the road, Matt?
Yeah, it definitely will. We'll have a leg up of everyone else. And there are plans for next April. There's plans for the end of next June. So I think that will help. That will help Plymouth. We'll be probably a leader in the state on that because of our anniversary. We'll keep leveraging that. But again, going back to the international business to come for that's just not going to be where we thought that would be. But I think, yeah, the local people, you know, within Massachusetts, New Hampshire, Rhode Island, all that will be here for that. So it's going to help us somewhat. And I think Stephen's right. You know, businesses down the waterfront are down about 30%. And they can manage that right now. When the winter comes, it's going to be a different story. But I think when the Plymouth 400 comes back into play in the spring and the summer, I think that's going to really jump that back up again.
Steve, the same question. Is this, while this isn't great that we're not celebrating the 400th anniversary on, you know, during the year that was planned out, is it kind of a positive thing that maybe it's an opportunity to be able to get more funding from the state to help the next year or two events?
Well, the state didn't come up with too much money, Mr. Tocci. The fact is that, you know, they kind of look at us as, you know, the Pilgrims landed in Providence, you know. And the fact, you know, they don't want to come up with the money. And we have to fight for more money. We have to fight for, you know, more funding if we are ever going to have a celebration. My wife, when she was alive, God rest her soul, we used to love to go to the biggest Thanksgiving parade, you know, and I feel that it touched my heart that they're not going to have it this year. And it was a big rah-rah, you know, and you know, a lot of the parades are banned from South Boston. There's a lot of alcohol and a lot of drunks. You know, when I grew up in South Boston, there was 52 bar rooms in a 3-mile radius, but 35,000 people went out and voted in Ward 6 and Ward 7. And to come to a nice, clean town and see people singing and enjoying the sunshine, it was touching. It's my town now.
Was there a particular event that you were looking forward to attending this year? Stephen?
Yeah, the parade.
Sorry, did I do something wrong?
No, that was me.
Oh.
Sorry.
Was there a particular event that you were looking forward to attending?
Yeah, I think the opening ceremony that was going to happen in April was going to be magnificent. You know, we had former Prime Minister John Major's going to be here to do the opening of it, and so many dignitaries from around the world are actually going to be coming to that, and it saddens me that that's not going to happen. But when you talk about the Spanish flu, I actually saw Michelle Pecoraro from the Plymouth 100 the other day. I said, "You've planned for everything except for a pandemic. Why didn't you? Because the Spanish flu happened, and you know, 100 years ago."
Let's go back now to Charles Matthews and questions for the candidates.
Okay, on the same subject, a pop quiz. Matt, what month did the Mayflower land?
In Plymouth?
Yes.
December.
Yes, Stephen Michael Palmer?
Oh, I'll say November.
It landed in late December of 1620. So all of the events that we think of the original colony happened in 1621.
Right.
And we're working into 2021.
Yep.
Interesting that all of the towns around that were part of Plymouth Colony are coming up with their own anniversaries. And of course, in 2030, we will have the anniversary, the 400th of Boston. Given that the state has not been generous to Plymouth in 2020, what will you do if you're elected, if you're still around in Beacon Hill, in 2030, when Boston wants a boatload of money?
Oh. Could you condense that question? I don't quite understand that.
Do you think that we've been gypped in Plymouth, and would you support a large party in Boston in 10 years?
Good. That's a Cliff Notes version. Let's go right now to Stephen Michael Palmer.
Well, you have to understand that Teresa Murray's gone, and Teresa Murray wouldn't let this happen. And Teresa Murray's a Democrat who I voted for after I lost. And the fact is that we have to understand that there's a big dividing line there up at the State House, Charlie, the haves and the have-nots. And we are right now, I think, at a spot in America. The fact is that we cannot get money from the state. Obviously, that shows with the 400 Club, and you know, the fact is that we cannot produce what we need, and we need stronger leadership. We need a stronger voice. We need someone to stand up and fight against the establishment, or they're going to walk all over us.
Matt Muratori, is there some rivalry between the 400s?
No at all. I'm going to respectfully disagree with you too, Charlie. I think the government has done a great job for Plymouth. People keep looking at the $2 million that they got to running the Plymouth 400 office over the last several years that started with Therese Murray, who I voted for as well, as a Democrat, as a Republican. We've also got $18,000 worth of infrastructure that came just to the town of Plymouth over the last 5 years as well. And people forget about that, but that really was done because in preparation of the 400th anniversary. If you go to the waterfront, you see how the whole waterfront has been redone over. Some of the dredging money that we were able to get, as well as the federal government. I mean, and the list goes on and on. We leveraged the Plymouth 400 because of the Plymouth 400, to leverage the state government for funding. And one thing that I actually have been pushing for a number of years is actually a 400 fund, not calling it Plymouth 400, and I started this 3 or 4 years ago. Let's call it a 400 fund, because there's going to be many communities before even Boston 2030 that we should be putting money into.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, you bring up one of my favorite topics. Of course, who doesn't like bacon? Bring home the bacon. I love to ask this question. Matt Moratori, while you've been in the seat as state rep, what kind of bacon have you brought home to the district here in the first Plymouth district?
Oh, my God. I think I said some of it in my opening remarks, but the list just kind of keeps going on. It's not me just doing this either. Mm-hmm. It's actually you work in collaboration with your with your senator, and right now it's Sue Moran, that was Vinnie DiMacedo. You work with in collaboration with your colleagues here on the South Shore, you know, with Kathy Lenatra, Josh Cutler, mm-hmm. the folks in the Cape with Dave Vieira, you know, Tim Whalen and Randy Hunt. We all work together because nobody can do it by themselves to get the funding.
Five.
The top five?
Yep.
Let me just read off right now. We secured the workforce skills grant for $317,000 for the Plymouth South High School. We secured a $120,000 grant for the Plymouth School Health Services. We secured $200,000 for the Town of Plymouth Foothills Preserve and Tidmarsh Walking Trails. And we obtained more than $3 million in additional roads and bridge funding for Plymouth.
Okay. Stephen Michael Palmer, you get elected to this district. You're going to bring home the bacon. What are the things that you want to bring back to the first Plymouth district? Give me your top three.
Well, I mentioned the NRC with the emergency, you know, radius of a 10-mile radius. That'd be $2 million. And the rest of the money would be for 40Bs. We need 40Bs in this town. The fact is they have a waiting list of 5 years for a one-bedroom, 3 years for a two-bedroom, and 4 years for a four-bedroom. I go over to Algonquin Heights and talk to the program director over there monthly and, you know, see what she thinks. And, you know, we have plus 55s going up all over the town, but we don't have any affordable housing, and it's not coming unless someone stands up there and speaks up against the establishment as well as the status quo. Everything's going great, and we still got the menthol mile over there at Mass Ave.
Okay, let's go to our lightning round now. These are when we ask the questions where the answers are either yes or no or one or two sentences. The reporter will ask what kind of an answer they want. Kevin Tachi, lightning round questions for the candidates here.
The bottle bill, this is multiple choice, needs to A, stay the same, B, be updated, C, be eliminated.
Okay.
Sorry.
Matt Moratori?
Yeah, B, updated.
Okay. Stephen Michael Palmer?
I'll go with B, too.
Okay. Charlie Mathewson, lightning round question.
What is your favorite bad habit? And it has to be your bad habit, and it has to be your favorite bad habit.
And no phony answers here that you work too hard. You know the deal. No Eddie Haskell answers. Let's start with Stephen Michael Palmer.
Bad habits. Picking up too much trash, Charlie, and cutting too much grass.
Okay, Eddie Haskell, thank you. Matt Moratori.
Well, it's a bad habit. I bite my nails, but I really enjoy it. It calms me down.
Thank you.
Yeah, it does.
You look pretty good from here. Okay, now, second wave of this pandemic is expected. Do either one of you have a large stash of toilet paper or paper towels? And if you do, how many do you have, Matt Moratori?
None.
Okay. Any big stash of paper towels and toilet paper? Stephen Michael Palmer.
Zero.
Okay. There we go. Another quick question.
I'm disappointed you didn't ask your patented question.
Okay. I'll ask it again. County government, stay or go? Stephen Michael Palmer.
Go.
Okay. Matt Moratori.
Stay.
Okay. I'm going to go to closing statements. Now we reverse the order. And so we started with, I'm going to look at my notes here. I can't remember who we started with. Okay.
Me.
Started with Matt. Going to go to Stephen Michael Palmer. 1 minute, please.
Yes. I'm very concerned about Plymouth, living there for 24 years. Property taxes have gone to a breaking point. Town manager makes more money than the mayor of L.A. with selectman approval. State government takes 5% of my dollar. Federal government takes 12% of my dollar. Plymouth takes $100 a week to breathe their air for me and my family. I remember when a phone call was a dime. Remember when TV was free. Healthcare and dental was covered by your employee if you worked 40 hours. So today, to have a phone, a TV, and dental, it's $9,000 a year, and I don't even get sick. Fact is, I'm running for state representative, and I'm looking for a vote. Looking for a miracle out there. I don't think people have been representative in Plymouth, and I feel that we need new eyes, a new set of ears, and a new mouth to stand up against the status quo and try to fight the establishment. Try to fight the establishment. Address the issues.
Thank you very much. That was Stephen Michael Palmer. Matt Moratori, your closing statement.
Yeah, well, first of all, I want to thank you, Christine, and Kevin, both and Charlie and Amy for hosting this tonight in WATD. You know, I'm involved with the community, have been for a number of years, love the community. I'm on the PAC board, PAC TV board of directors. I'm a Plymouth Economic Foundation, a member of Sunrise Rotary. We do so many things for the community. I'm a member of the Plymouth Chamber of Commerce and the Plymouth Youth Development Collaborative. You know, I think going back to Beacon Hill, there's a lot of work that still needs to be done. The economy, which was brought up tonight, I think my background in business, well, small business will help that as a small business owner. My background in healthcare is going to help with the healthcare crisis that we're going to be in, and funding for healthcare and being on the healthcare finance will be crucial for our community and for the Commonwealth. And also, as Stephen brought up about affordable housing as well, something I've been pushing for a few years now. We do need more affordable housing in this community, I've been a champion for that, and we'll continue to fight for that. I'm proud of my endorsements of the National Federation of Independent Businesses, the Professional Firefighters Union, et cetera, and I want to keep fighting for the people of Plymouth, and I ask for their vote in October when they start voting.
Thank you very much. That was Matt Moratori. There are the two candidates here for the 1st Plymouth District. You've got the incumbent, Matt Moratori, the Republican, challenger, Democrat, Stephen Michael Palmer, asking questions with me tonight, Kevin Tachi, the host of Monday Night Talk, Charles Mathewson, who is our reporter, Amy Leonard, doing a great job of timing, too. And you can listen to this tomorrow. This will be posted up online in selected cuts tomorrow morning. Get out and vote November 3rd. Remember, if you don't vote, you don't have a voice. I'm Christine James, 95.9 WATD.